Hello, iterative marketers. Welcome to the Iterative Marketing Podcast, where each week we give marketers and entrepreneurs actionable ideas, techniques, and examples to improve your marketing results. If you want notes and links to the resources discussed on the show, sign up to get them emailed to you each week at iterativemarketing.net. There you'll also find the Iterative Marketing blog and our community LinkedIn group where you can share ideas and ask questions of your fellow iterative marketers. Now let's dive into the show. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Iterative Marketing Podcast. I'm your host, Steve Robinson, and with me, as always, is the informative but never dull Elizabeth Aaron. How are you doing today, Elizabeth?
I'm good, Steve. How are you?
I'm doing well. Doing well.
Did you guys do anything fun this weekend?
We did. We got our hands on some tickets to the local symphony put on a show of Fantasia with Ooh. The symphony orchestra playing the music. And then clips from the movie played on a big screen. So they welcomed kids at the performance. So I took my 5-year-old son, and we had a great time.
Did he enjoy it?
He really enjoyed it, and I actually enjoyed it. Though I found myself kind of being sucked into the production that went into it. We don't really think about. How long it took to make things back then. That was 1940, and these were not simple, like, cartoon character walking across the screen animations. These were super complicated, lots of stuff moving, trying to emulate the physics of water and stuff like that, and had to be hand-drawn frame by frame, and to think that they made a 2.5-hour production on top of all of the time that went into recording the music and syncing everything up. It's just mind-blowing when you think how quick we can just throw something into GarageBand or into iMovie today and quick crank something out, you know?
Yeah, I love Fantasia because it's just, there were so many firsts that happened. I think it was the first time they used color, and there were a few other things that they did then. And so, to your point, yeah, when you think back and you look at it, you know, we sort of take that for granted now when we have these 2.5-3-hour long animated films. And today, compared to what they did back then, and all of it being done by hand, is just phenomenal.
Yeah, and not to say that there isn't a ton of art in it today, and that there isn't a ton of time and tedious effort put into making, you know, animated fur look like fur, but it's a different type of production, and not I'm sure not a little bit more intellectually stimulating, and not as just grueling as this frame by frame. I can't imagine the amount of work. So what are we talking about today if we aren't talking about Fantasia?
So today we're talking about documenting and iterating, specifically the keys to discovering actionable insights.
Yeah, I think this is an area that we kind of gloss over and throw out buzzwords of actionable insights, and we never really get into what that means. So I think it's a great topic to dive in. How are we going to approach it?
Yeah, well, thank you. We're going to start by exploring actionable insights and why they're so important to the iterative marketing process. To your point, we talk about it a lot. It's one of the great benefits of iterative marketing. But to your point, we haven't really touched on it. So we're going to dive a little bit deeper into that. We're also going to talk about why documentation and iteration is so important to the process and what that specifically looks like. And then also how to make that part of your routine so you're always improving, always making things better.
So the first step is to define this buzzword we throw around, actionable insights. The first step is really breaking down what that means from an insight standpoint, right?
It is, and I think it's important that we start here because you hear this thrown out all the time in business and in analytics, and especially when you're looking at business intelligence software solutions. I was looking at them over the weekend, and every other word was actionable insights. But, you know, again, it's one of those buzzwords. Do we really know what it means?
Yeah, and if you look at the word insight, it really comes as a link between data or information and a business outcome. So you have the raw data or the information that comes out of it, and then the outcome, and the insight is what connects those two, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we want to understand the relationship between the data, the information, and the insights. And so I think it might make sense for us to take a minute here and sort of break this down.
Yeah, so data is raw information. If you tried to look at most data sets that we work with, just looking at the individual pieces of information, your brain would go numb and you wouldn't be able to make heads or tails of it. So examples of this are, you know, every little click or session on our website, every last record in our contact database, the individual survey responses that you might get from a large survey that you do. Those are all examples of data, and they're not really usable on their own.
No, especially when you talk about as many data points that are out there, when you start seeing so many of them, not only can you not, are they not actionable, but they're not even consumable at that point. And so you may be looking at thousands of website sessions or hundreds of thousands of ad impressions. And so it's really trying to figure out, take that data and turn it into something that you can use.
And so we use software to take that data and aggregate it and combine it with other data sources and distill it down into information that is consumable, that's palatable to our brains. Because if we just try to look record by record by record by record, it's not going to work. It's not until you put it into a graph or put it into a table and add things up and average things and start to look at the numbers behind it as they're aggregated that it starts to make any sense. And that's what we call information, right?
Yes, but even information on its own isn't necessarily an insight. Information, until it answers a question, it doesn't have that insight component to it.
Yeah, and I can't tell you the number of times that I've seen BI dashboards or dashboards to certain applications that are, it's nice. It's a lot of pretty graphs and numbers, but I don't know what to do with this stuff. It's just numbers, right? What does this mean? And I think that's the key missing link is the what does it mean? And so when we use the data and more importantly, the information that we're able to distill out of the data to answer a question, that's when it becomes the insight. And I think it doesn't really matter if you're starting with the question and then going out and getting the data and the information to answer the question, or if you already have that data and information on hand to be able to answer the question. It's the answer to the question that makes it an insight and not just data or information.
So we've been talking a little bit abstract here. Do you have an example? Can you provide an example to help put this into context for our listeners?
Sure. So let's just say that we wanted to understand if our customers were male or female. That's the question that we want to answer. There's a couple of ways we could go about doing this. We may have the information on hand to answer the question out of turn without any real analysis, because some dashboard somewhere has gender on it as a breakdown based on what's in our database or what's in our website traffic for a customer portal or something along those lines, where somebody else has already pulled that data together and analyzed it into information. So there, you know, the information is at our fingertips. We can answer the question. We have the insight. In other cases, that question might not be readily answerable based on the data we have at hand, or maybe the data is lying around, but it needs to be distilled down into information and we need to do some analysis. So maybe somebody ran a survey, we have a bunch of survey data laying around, but nobody actually analyzed whether or not more people answered the male question or more people answered male or female. Maybe we need to issue a new survey or a pop-up poll on our website, or we need to install something to go and capture third-party data as people interact with something in order to answer this question, in which case we're going to do our own data gathering in order to answer the question. Does that help kind of put it in more concrete terms?
Yeah, I think that does.
So that kind of answers the question of what an insight is. An insight literally answers a question, right? So, mm-hmm. But what makes it actionable?
Yeah, actionable insights take that a step further, and that it drives future action. And so I think there's a few things that sort of have to be included in that have to be part of this insight that take it to that next level and make it an actionable insight that will drive future action. And the first one would be relevance. We have to make sure that the insight is aligned to our key business goals, and we have to plan for them. It's something that becomes an afterthought. It's something that is purposely sought out.
Yeah. So that insight, for example, about the gender of our customer base might not be all that applicable if we sell, say, copy paper. Mm-hmm. Or if you recall Lady Bic, the pen, right? It's not it's not really all that useful and could end up really backfiring if we tried to use it in that context. So it's not an actionable insight if it doesn't apply to our business and our goals.
Another component that makes it an actionable insight is when it's useful outside of the environment in which it's been derived. So we talk about button color a lot because it's a great example. Which color buttons are most effective isn't useful outside of the website that we're talking about, the website that we're testing it on. We can't transfer that knowledge to billboard advertising or to other advertising or to other customer experiences across the organization because it doesn't have a place there.
Same thing would be true about, you know, which individual billboards we were running, which intersections to run billboards at for the most brand lift is not a piece of information that's particularly useful outside of billboard advertising, right? So we're looking for insights that are usable outside of the medium. So if we find out something about our audience, about how they tick, what makes them do what they do, that can be picked up and lifted outside of the environment in which we tested it. So which features and benefits are most effective? Which emotional triggers are they most apt to respond to? We can take that information and apply it across multiple different mediums outside of the medium we derived in. I think the third thing is that you absolutely have to have enough supporting information to run with that insight. We as marketers are just as fallible in this as anybody else in that we will see anecdotal information, we'll see one customer testimonial or customer complaint and immediately pick it up and go, ooh, we can use that, and then run with it. But the reality is, if you don't have sufficient data to support something, it's not actionable. It's just fodder for another experiment or something that you need to go out and verify or learn, right?
I think it's a great point, and I'm sort of smiling here because I have done this multiple times, and you swear you're not going to fall prey to it, and then it happens because there's this one piece of information that just stands out from everything else, and there's a reason that it's standing out. It's because it's an outlier. It's not the norm.
Yeah, and we love surprising new information, so it's particularly apt there. The next thing that we need to know is that what's the context to the insight? Because just because we learn a new piece of information or a fact that we know is impactful to our business doesn't mean we know how it's impactful to our business. I think you had a great example of this, Elizabeth, with Dollar Shave Club, right?
Yeah, we've talked about Dollar Shave Club before. It's one of our, favorite case studies to sort of bring up. But Shave Club had noticed that many of their subscribers were women, but they didn't know if it was because they were purchasing for the men in their lives or they were purchasing for themselves. So without that supporting information that they were purchasing for themselves, which is what it turned out to be, it wasn't an insight, it was just information. And without having that information, without knowing why they were making that purchase, who it was for, they couldn't use that to then, make changes to their marketing strategy or changes to their operations to help capitalize on that.
And now if you've caught any of their latest ads, and I think Harry's picked up on the same thing, they're now both marketing to women because they've noticed that women actually were subscribing for themselves. So the next item that is on our checklist of what makes an insight actionable is timeliness. It's amazing how fast information becomes irrelevant as the business climate changes, as your business itself changes. And you may find that your target audience shifts over time and the insights that you gathered 2-3 years ago just aren't as applicable today as they were back then because either who you're selling to has changed, because you're selling to a different group of people, or that group of people's consumer habits have changed. And we are in a particularly tumultuous time right now when it comes to people's media consumption habits and our interactions with technology and how we even fundamentally make decisions is changing today. And so you have to be very careful about what you carry over for too long.
I would even argue, it goes beyond just how long you have the data or how old it is, but, seasonality can impact that as well. Insights that you gain, in the pre-holiday season aren't necessarily going to be applicable in post-holiday season. And so, there's different things you want to keep in mind when you're taking a look at that and making those, drawing those insights.
That's a great point. I hadn't thought about that.
And finally, and this is my favorite one, is that actionable insights must be communicated with the right people. If they're not, they can't be applied. And so if you're operating within a silo, if you're keeping your information within marketing, then you're not realizing the true potential of these actionable insights. If you were to share this with research and development or a new product development team or your sales team or, you know, even your operations team who has people who are dealing frontline with your customers, these are all people that can benefit from actionable insights. And so you want to make sure that you are sharing that throughout the organization.
Yeah, and that could even happen within your own marketing group. We've worked with clients where they have a big enough team where they've got different agencies involved, and information can be siloed even within different groups within marketing. So it becomes really important to get this written down someplace in a report and or a permanent repository where it can be picked up elsewhere.
That is a great point. Thanks, Steve.
So how does this tie back to iterative marketing and what we've been sort of preaching this whole podcast?
Yes. So when we apply actionable insights to iterative marketing, we're often talking about one of two things, either emotional triggers or rational justifications.
And emotional triggers, these are the things that cause us to act because, and I've harped on this in multiple episodes before, but, you know, at our base, we are, we're somewhat animalistic in how we make decisions and what triggers us to act, and that it's usually an emotionally driven action that causes us to move, right? And so examples of some of these are things like fear of missing out or social proof, wanting to be part of that crowd, right? The idea of scarcity, if I don't get it now, it's not going to be there later. Or reciprocity, you gave me this great piece of, this great tool or white paper, I now think better of your brand and want to help you in return. There's lots of other ones, cognitive congruence, authority, a sense of belonging. There's all these little buttons that we as marketers either consciously or inadvertently push to get our audiences to act. But our audiences are all different, and they're going to respond differently to different triggers. And sometimes these triggers can backfire and our audience can feel manipulated or used. Sometimes they can be really effective in getting them to act. And so part of the developing insights in an iterative process is testing different triggers and figuring out which ones are most effective, which ones move our audience, and which ones backfire.
The second one we mentioned was rational justifications. And, you know, it's funny because this weekend, this actually stopped me from making a purchase. I fell prey to, you know, the social proof piece of it. A girlfriend was talking about wanting a new pair of UGG boots. I don't need UGG boots, but she was talking about it and it got me excited. And that's where my rational justification came in. And it actually it kept me from buying it. So it kind of backfired a little bit there. But rational justifications is when we're talking, it's what we're using to back up why we're doing it. The reason is, you know, sort of justifying why we should make this purchase. And oftentimes it comes down to saving time or saving money, or it makes us money when we're looking at our B2B side, or it improves another outcome in your life.
Yeah, I did the same thing. Popped up on Amazon that a pair of car mounts for my cell phone were on sale. And I'm like, you know, I kind of thought about those in the past. They're on sale. I should buy them now because they're cheaper. So that was the first justification, right? I don't really need the car mount for my cell phone in my car, but I bought it. And the second justification is I'm getting a new car, so I need a new car mount, which makes zero sense. You know, our brains are quick to fill in the gaps, to figure out why we need something that we decided that we needed in the heat of a moment.
And to your point earlier, you know, really understanding our audience and which of these triggers are setting them off can help us to produce more effective marketing messaging going forward.
A lot of people think, well, this emotional, rational business applies, that makes sense in B2C, where we're making impulse buying decisions or we're buying because we like things. But what about in the B2B environment? And our experience has been that this is just as true, if not more so, in B2B. It changes a little bit on the rational justification because you're not necessarily just trying to justify it to yourself. You might also be justifying things to other stakeholders within the organization. But that's really no different to when I have to turn to my wife and explain why I spent how much money on what I spent it on, right?
And there's other psychographic data that can be useful for targeting or making our messages more relevant. And, you know, this includes social class, lifestyle, personality, opinions, attitudes, interests, hobbies, loyalties, values. These are all the types of things that we like to document in our personas and that carry through to our customer journeys.
Yeah. And those are really helpful as you refine and build upon those when you have to come up with compelling messaging and you want to relate to your audience and you want to really better empathize with them and be inside their world and understand the context in which they're going to receive your message. All of these little layers and details, which may not seem as actionable of an insight at the time, if it gets you closer to your target audience, if it helps you see the world from their eyes and feel the earth through their shoes, then that's actionable. That helps you be a better marketer, and it's worth gathering.
Definitely. So what do we do with these insights once we've generated them?
So the first key is documenting them. And when we look at when we gather these insights, generally they tie back to a specific audience, or at least we want them to tie back to a specific audience. So if things are going well, this ties back to an individual persona and you're able to just simply update that persona document. But it could be that it ties back to a different segmentation of your audience along some other line than persona. Maybe, you know, if you're B2B in industry or B2C, it could be a different product set or something along those lines.
But I think the key here, though, I just want to touch on something you said, is that it ties back to a segment. Because if it doesn't tie back to a segment, and if you're trying to apply it to your audience as a whole, we run into some issues there.
Yeah. If you try to glean insights on too broad of an audience, it becomes very hard to make blanket statements or generalizations that in turn are the insights that you're trying to gather, because all of a sudden you start poking at the outliers and you start saying, well, that isn't always true. If we look over here, and suddenly you might have data that even negates the very insight that you've gleaned, because you've got a one group of your audience that's very true about, but the other group of your audience, it's very untrue. And so all of a sudden those two things cancel each other out and you've got zero insight. So it becomes very important to narrow in on smaller segments of like people within your audience, which is generally the segmentation
ultimate
that you're using
goal
for
and
your
documenting
marketing
and iterating
and
is really
anyway.
To round out the psychographic profile and test those assumptions on how they justify, how our customers are justifying their decisions. And when we do this through documentation and iteration, that's really the key of getting to the heart of these insights.
So should all of our insights tie back to our persona, our customer journey, or some other segment?
I was going to actually ask you that same question. I think this is where it gets a little bit complicated, because, you know, we want to come up with these actionable insights that can apply across the organization. But, you know, to the earlier point, if we go too broad, are we setting ourselves up for failure?
And more importantly, at least within marketing, can we even use them? Right? Because if we're doing our jobs on the personalization front, if we're doing our jobs on aligning our media to an individual segment and their customer journey, and aligning our creative and our content and all of our output, then if our insights are not aligned to the same segments that we're marketing to, and ultimately that the whole business should be serving, then it becomes really hard to apply them, because they don't fit in the same boxes that we've put our prospects and customers in.
Mm-hmm. So let's maybe talk about this, give an example here and help our listeners really understand this a little bit better. If I'm specifically in B2B marketing, and I've decided that LinkedIn, or I've determined that LinkedIn is a great channel, and so I say I'm going to use it universally across all of my audiences that I serve, this is probably not a true segment unless I've tested across all of those segments individually, correct?
Yeah, and we will often, as marketers, fall into this trap. We'll do our jobs as far as testing with a small audience, and then immediately assume that because we had great results with that small audience, that the same insight is applicable outside of the box that we tested it in, without going and testing it elsewhere. When the reality is, we find out that LinkedIn works great with Gary's, I'm making up a persona name here, and Gary's respond really well on LinkedIn. That doesn't mean that Julie's are going to respond as favorably. And that's just another reason for us to now replicate the same test with Julie's to see if Julie's are as strong, stronger, or weaker in the results on LinkedIn.
So to your point, we'll replicate that test with our Julies. And then based on the outcome of that, if it works or it doesn't work, we're going to go back and we're going to update our internal documentation to reflect what we've now learned about our new audience.
Exactly, exactly. So I think this is a great opportunity for us to take a quick break and go help some people. So let's do that.
Before we continue, I'd like to take a quick moment to ask you iterative marketers a small but meaningful favor. This week, we would like to highlight Amazon Smile. If your nonprofit organization is looking for a way to raise additional funds, Amazon Smile may be a good option. It is a website operated by Amazon that donates 0.5% of all eligible purchases to the charitable organization selected by the customer. Learn more at org.amazon.com or visit the link in the show notes. Next week, we will return to listener-submitted causes. If you would like to submit your cause for consideration for our next podcast, please visit iterativemarketing.net/podcast and click the Share a Cause button. We love sharing causes that are important to you.
And we're back. So before the break, we talked a lot about what an actionable insight is and how to make sure that the insights that we're gleaning are both insights and not just information, and that they're actionable and we can apply them. But I think we skipped a key element of this actionable insight, especially as it relates to iterative marketing. Do you want to touch on that a little bit, Elizabeth?
Yes, definitely. We left out that it needs to be continuous, that we need to continuously be documenting and iterating, and that continuous documentation and iteration is the key to discovering those actionable insights. And what this means is that we need to set up a loop or a cadence to our insight gathering, whether it be a monthly or a quarterly meeting where we meet with our team to discuss the insights that we want to obtain, or we're simply setting, you know, reoccurring milestones or to-dos on our to-do list. Either way, we're making sure that we are regularly checking back in, that we are regularly testing, and that we are regularly documenting this information.
Let's go through a loop that we've set up with our clients. And I'll admit we're at various stages of implementing this loop with individual clients, and it's certainly not something that... you have to do all at once, but you want to get as many components of this in place as possible and then continue to refine. The key thing is making sure that you're doing it in a loop, right? So the first step is documenting the outcome that you want to achieve. What is your hypothesis? And what question are you trying to answer? And oftentimes you'll find that if you have a question that you want to answer, but then you can't seem to come up with a hypothesis, that perhaps this isn't going to be that insightful of an insight when you get to the other side, right? But this is key, because if you don't know what you're looking for, you're never going to find it.
Definitely. And then the next thing you want to do is determine if you already have the data or information to prove your hypothesis. We've come across this before where we want to know something. So we want to set up an experiment. But when we go back and we look at some of the information we've gathered in the past, we actually already have this information at our fingertips and it just needs to be reviewed and gone through. So first, you want to make sure that you don't already have this information.
And then you want to execute any experiments or other data gathering that you need to do. And, you know, we're big on experiments. You can go back and listen to the episodes of the podcast that talk about experiments. We'll link to some blog posts in the show notes as well. But sometimes an experiment isn't necessarily the best way to get the information, and you might need to run a poll or a survey or do some other fact-finding to get the data that you need in order to be able to prove or disprove your hypothesis.
And once you've done this, you want to update your persona and segmentation documentation. Again, we want to make sure that we are documenting the insights that we've gleaned from our data.
Once you've updated your own internal records on the segment that you gained an insight for, now you want to make sure that you communicate this outside of your little world. So whether that's your group within the marketing team or it's the entire organization, you need to make sure that you're publishing your insights, your findings in regular reporting.
And I think the final sort of step to this loop is you want to make sure that you're documenting any additional questions that come up in the process. And this can either come up, you know, once you start gathering insights and it leads to additional questions, or this could be that 2 a.m. wakes you up in the middle of the night and you have this, you know, epiphany of a question that you want to make sure you document. You want to find a place to keep these questions so that when you're looking for your next experiment, you make sure that you are pulling from questions that have, you know, kept you awake at night.
And this is one of the beautiful parts about setting up this loop or cadence, is that you'll find that the first few times you do this, you're really struggling or reaching for what insight do I want to gather? I'm stuck. I can't think of something that I need to know or what's most important for me to know right now. And then all of a sudden you'll find that for every insight you gather, it raises two or three more questions. And then you're thinking along these lines and you are getting those flashes when you're in the shower of oh no, wait, we don't really know this about Julie, do we? So we need to go back and verify that. And all of a sudden your tickler file is actually really long, and now you have a whole bunch of insights that are in your list to go and gather for your next meeting.
And this doesn't have to be a complicated document. We actually use an Excel spreadsheet that we just keep things running for. The entire team has access to it, and so we just plug in questions. I do recommend that you be as descriptive as you can in that question, because we've had a few times where we've had a somewhat vague question and couldn't remember what we were trying to get at with it. But coming back to one of Steve's points earlier is that you do have to really make the effort to make this happen. Because as we get wrapped up in our day-to-day activities that we're doing of running our departments and meeting the needs of our internal and external stakeholders, this is one of those things that can fall by the wayside, and we don't want it to. There's so much opportunity, there's so much upside if we are continuously experimenting and continuously improving, and it builds on itself. And so you really want to make sure that you are making time to make this a priority within your marketing department.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, let's kind of run through the key points that we talked about today, because we talked about a lot. So actionable insights are a couple of things. On the insight end of things, they're the link between data and a business outcome. And then to be actionable, they have to tie back to an actual business need. They have to have some context. They have to be substantiated by data. We can't be looking at anecdotal information here. And they have to be delivered in a timely manner or relevant to the time frame that we're executing the insight for. Mm-hmm. And then finally, none of this happens if you don't make it happen, and the best way that we found to make it happen is to set it up on a continuous loop or a cadence. So set a regular meeting, a regular milestone, something like that that's going to bring you back to it, and keep a tickler file of future experiments or insights that you want to garner about individual segments or audiences so that you're never short of ideas when that meeting or milestone occurs. That way we always continue getting better and smarter and faster. And so on that note, I want to thank everybody for making time again for us this week. We always appreciate it. We don't take your time for granted. And until next week, onward and upward.
If you haven't already, be sure to subscribe to the podcast on YouTube or your favorite podcast directory. If you want notes and links to resources discussed on the show, sign up to get them emailed to you each week at iterativemarketing.net. There, you'll also find the Iterative Marketing blog and our community LinkedIn group, where you can share ideas and ask questions of your fellow iterative marketers. You can also follow us on Twitter. Our username is @ITER8IVE, or email us at podcast@iterativemarketing.net. The Iterative Marketing Podcast is a production of Brilliant Metrics, a consultancy helping brands and agencies rid the world of marketing waste. Our producer is Heather Ullman, with transcription assistance from Emily Bechtel. Our music is by Seastock Audio Music Production and Sound Design. You can check them out at seastockaudio.com. We'll see you next week. Until then, onward and upward.